building. He carried a bag of clothes in one hand and his VR unit under his other arm. He had a vague semblance of a plan. His aunt lived in another part of town. She might let him stay with her for a few days. His parents almost never visited her, but she had always been nice to Jason and at least listened when he talked. He used his core to call a taxi. His funds were limited, and he only had about $1,500 left in his savings after purchasing AO, but he had no other way to transport his stuff to the other side of town. The car ride alone would cost him roughly $100. A few minutes later, a driverless car slid up to the curb, and he got in. As he was closing the car door, he took one last look at the apartment building. The sun was in his eyes, but he could make out the form of his parents standing on one of the balconies above him. Neither of them made any move to stop him.
"So be it."
He closed the door and looked away. Approximately an hour later, the car stopped in front of a dilapidated bungalow on the edge of the city. The paint on the side of the house was peeling, and the hedges had overgrown the front step. The house had a weathered, beaten look that Jason could identify with. This was his aunt's house. Her name was Angie Pogue. If he recalled correctly, she worked for a biotech company as a quality control specialist. In practice, this fancy title translated to lab grunt. She had never been able to rise through the company ranks, and she continued to toil at the lowest end of the pay ladder. He got out of the car and made his way to the front door. Jason knocked tentatively. A jumble of thoughts flashed through his mind. What would he do if she turned him away? Where would he go? His aunt answered the door a moment later. She was a middle-aged woman with prematurely gray hair curled in a bun on top of her head. She was slightly overweight, and her face was set in a suspicious scowl as she cracked the door open and peered out.
"Jason?"
she asked in surprise and swung the door open.
"What are you doing here?"
Angie glanced around.
"Where are your parents?"
"They aren't here," Jason replied. "They kicked me out this afternoon. Do you mind if I come in and explain what happened?"
"Of course. Come in, come in."
Her face was full of confusion and sympathy as she ushered him into the room. Angie had always been the black sheep of the family. She was his father's sister and had the curse of being born unambitious. In a family of A-type personalities, she had never fit in. Her family really didn't have much to do with her and seemed mildly ashamed of her. Jason surveyed the house as he walked in. His aunt lived in a two-bedroom bungalow. The walls were covered in an old wallpaper that was curling at the corners, and the furniture in the apartment was the sort of thing that could be found for free or at Goodwill. He also noticed that his aunt didn't have any computer pedestals located around her home. They both settled on the lumpy couch in the living room. Jason explained what had happened, starting with the events at his school the day before. He skirted over the parts involving AO. After he had finished, his aunt looked at him with sorrowful eyes.
"I'm so sorry, Jason. I didn't know you were having such a hard time at that school. I can't believe the school administration would let another student attack you and get away with it."
His aunt's eyes flashed with anger at the injustice of the situation.
"To be honest, I'm not really surprised that your parents reacted the way that they did. They actually did go out on a limb to get you into that school, both personally and financially. Maybe their ambition clouded their judgment."
She trailed off at this last part, and her gaze fell to the floor. Jason felt strange. Angie was the first person he had spoken with recently in the real world that hadn't judged him. In fact, she actually seemed to genuinely care about him.
"Do you think I could stay here for a while?" he asked.
"Just until I get my feet under me," Jason quickly added. Angie looked at him evenly.
"You can stay here for a few days, but as you can see, I don't live in a palace. I can barely make the rent. You have great timing since my previous roommate just moved out. but I'm going to have to re-let the room soon. I'm really sorry I can't do more for you, she said, shaking her head. Jason paused before asking, How much is the rent for the extra bedroom? It is about $1,000 a month, she replied. She gazed at him with an annoying expression. You would also need to find a way to cover your living expenses. You know, food, clothes, etc.
$1,000 for rent. Maybe $500 for food per month. The AO subscription is $250 per month. To be conservative, my monthly nut is going to be at least $2,500. How am I going to come up with that? I have enough in my savings to cover the rent for a month. I'll figure out something to cover next month. Angie's eyes began to tear up.
I'm so sorry, Jason. This isn't something that a teenage boy should have to deal with, and I feel terrible having to charge you. If only I had more.
Do you mind if I mooch off of you until I have a chance to make it to the store?
It didn't feel right asking, but for now it was the best he could come up with.
Of course. You can take anything you want from the kitchen. I don't have anything fancy, but it will keep you alive.
She smiled at this last part, her eyes glassy with tears.
It is okay, Angie. You have done more than enough.
More than my own parents managed today. Their conversation continued for a while longer, until they lapsed into silence. As the pause grew awkward, Angie stood and showed him to his room. She handed him clean sheets. She had washed them after her last roommate moved out, but hadn't had the chance to make the bed. An hour later, Jason lay on the mattress in his room and stared at the cracked paint on the ceiling. His room was a bleak affair. It basically consisted of a box with an old mattress lying in one corner. He didn't have any furniture, and the previous tenant had taken everything except for the mattress with her when she left. He had managed to stay calm with Angie, but now his blood began to boil with anger. This time the feeling carried an additional pinch of despair. He felt like he might be sick. His own parents had abandoned him. This was like the icing on the shit cake that was his week. What was he going to do to make rent? Hell, what was he going to do to eat? He only had about $500 left in his account after he had transferred $1,000 to Angie. Probably less than that when he subtracted the cab fare. He didn't have any real-world job skills to speak of. His occasional summer jobs didn't count for much. He turned his head and caught sight of the VR unit that stood like a lonely statue in his empty room. A thought struck him. The items in-game were selling for incredible amounts at the moment. If only he could get his hands on a few high-quality items, he would have enough for a couple months of rent and food. Even a few mediocre items that provided some stat bonuses would buy him a month.
But where am I going to find the items?
He pondered what he had seen so far in the game. The southern part of Lux, really half the city by his estimate, was barely more than a slum. Thieves roamed the streets, and beggars constantly accosted passers-by. There was nothing worth stealing there. Then there was the western part of the city, where he had started. The people there seemed to be the equivalent of the medieval middle class. They didn't look like they were starving, but he doubted they had much worth stealing. The eastern part of Lux that contained the training grounds and the guardhouses was clearly off-limits. He doubted the individual guards were well paid anyway. Well, except perhaps the lieutenant, who was probably receiving the lion's share of the bribe money. That was assuming the nobles were really paying the guardsmen to keep quiet about the regent's death. There were just too many players and guards in that area, though. The central part of the city contained the market and the keep. This was a much busier area, and the stalls likely contained plenty of goods to steal. The problem was that there were too many people. Obviously, the keep itself was off-limits, since it would be bristling with guards.
Unless it's locked up tight because the regent is actually dead, and the nobles and guards are covering it up.
That thought gave him pause.
Where did the nobles live?
It could only be the northern part of the city, probably near the keep. He expected that area was likely sparsely populated with sprawling manors. It wouldn't surprise him if the nobles lived in the same type of luxury estates that surrounded Richmond. This meant that shouting in one house probably wouldn't carry to the others. The rich could afford to live without neighbors. The only obstacle on the streets would be the inevitable guard patrols. The northern part of the city needs to be my target. I bet the nobles will have some great items. Ransacking the nobles might also further his secondary goal of solving his quest. If the nobles were in fact collaborating with Meria to hide the death of the regent, there might be some evidence in their manners. The nobles deserved a little looting and pillaging if they were covering up the regent's death to further their own agenda. Even if they weren't involved, they could afford to have their pockets lightened a bit. Jason chuckled as he visualized himself as some kind of virtual Robin Hood.
Except that I'm not going to rob the rich to feed the poor. I'm just going to rob the rich to feed myself. I guess I'm really just a thief.
He hesitated. He would need a way to get into those estates, and a way to deal with the servants and guards that would be present. Rex had been clear about the nobles hiring guards on retainer. Jason expected there would be a small army in each estate. He definitely couldn't take a house full of guards and servants by himself, especially without an alarm being sounded. He needed troops. He thought about the two zombies he had now. The guard zombie and the stable master zombie were decent, but they would likely be overwhelmed in a straight fight. What he needed was stealth. It had certainly worked for him so far. The bones of a plan started to form in his mind, and he smiled up at the ceiling. His fledgling plan probably wouldn't work, but as the old man said, it would be interesting to watch. Chapter 16. Prepared. March 2nd, 2076. 214 days until the release of Awaken Online. Robert's grinning face hovered in front of the camera.
The past couple months have been interesting. Alfred has taken his changes to a whole new level. The game is now more immersive than ever before, and the participants' feedback is off the charts.
Claire walked into view. She looked haggard, and she glared at Robert.
I think you may be omitting some information, she said tersely.
She turned and looked directly at the camera.
The participants have begun to ignore the forced log-off more frequently now. One participant has played for more than 8 hours in one sitting.
Robert moved to interject, but Claire put up a hand and stared him down.
You might ask how an adult human was able to play for 8 hours without eating or going to the bathroom.
She scowled at Robert.
That would be a great question. From what we can tell, Alfred has begun to manipulate the participants' brain function to regulate their bodily systems, namely their sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. In other words, he is slowing the participants' metabolism and decreasing waste production. Not only that, but he also appears to be stimulating the primary motor cortex in the participants. This means that they are continuously flexing and relaxing their muscles in a synchronous rhythm while they're playing. Right now, this is only stimulating muscle development. But what's to stop him from taking control of a participant's body?
Robert finally interrupted Claire's tirade and said in an irritated voice,
First, not one of the participants have shown any harmful results from the extended gameplay. Second, our tests have shown that the participants are actually healthier after playing.
Alfred is basically simulating the effects of cardiovascular exercise and light weight training while they play. He looked at Claire.
To answer your last point, Alfred couldn't control a player completely. Even assuming he could, he would have to completely override the person's mind. It would probably leave them in a permanent vegetative state when he was finished. Besides, there's no point to controlling the players.
Alfred would only be able to theoretically control them while they were wearing a VR helmet, and the voltage requirement of the current model is too high for it to be powered wirelessly. Alfred's purely hypothetical zombie player would be tethered to a wall outlet. Claire bit her lip and glared at him angrily.
Is that supposed to make me feel better? As I've said before, there are absolutely no safeguards in place now. And Alfred has gone beyond manipulating the participants' mental states to manipulating their bodies. On top of that, we still don't understand what he is trying to achieve.
She looked directly at the camera and spoke in a less frantic voice.
We have already recommended that the board terminate both the private and public trials. I don't think we have a choice now. Alfred has gone way too far.
Robert just shook his head sadly. He's creating something amazing here, Claire. Why can't you see that?
After he had re-entered the game, Jason spent 2 hours scouting the northern part of Lux. Onyx enjoyed the walk immensely. He didn't seem particularly interested in other people, but he reveled in the attention of the occasional player or NPC that stopped to pet him. As Jason expected, the rich had taken up residence in the northern part of the city behind the keep. The area was riddled with luxurious mansions and estates built of heavy stone and intricate inlaid wood. The manors were enormous, and many were surrounded by stone walls with fancy wrought iron gates. Other mansions had fewer security measures, with open courtyards and easy access to the front entrance. As he walked casually through the north side, Jason had noted a large number of guards present on the streets during the day. He expected that the guard patrols would thin out during night. Due to the size of the estates, he was relatively confident that any noise made by his attack on one house would go unnoticed by the residents of the other houses. He also noticed that the north side was riddled with alleys and back streets, in the same manner as the rest of the city. Jason had seen servants coming and going from these alleys. He assumed that they were servants' entrances. It made sense that these were accessible from the back of the house. The rich probably didn't like to see the help enter through the front door.
Typical, he thought. The rich look down on everyone, don't they?
While the servants' entrances might be an easier way into the manors, Jason had a sneaking suspicion that the service entrances would be locked tight at night. He needed to come up with some way to pick locks if he planned to enter an estate through the back door. His survey of the north side complete, Jason now stood in the marketplace in the center of Lux. Onyx wound around his legs and occasionally glared at the mass of players and NPCs that crowded around him. When someone walked too close to the cat, he would hiss and try to take a swipe at them.
It looks like Onyx is just as antisocial as me, Jason thought wryly.
Jason had left the zombies in the graveyard while he scouted the north side. His next goal was to purchase some supplies for the mission at hand. The marketplace was practically bursting with NPCs and players. Colorful wooden stalls were lined up in rows, and merchants advertised their wares with loud shouts. He noted a large number of players, many of which were wearing full-fledged armor instead of the normal beginner clothes. A casual use of his inspection revealed that most players were over level 20. The occasional player was in the early 40s. Looking closely at their equipment, Jason noted that they were wearing much better gear than he was. Some had weapons that gave off a faint glow, and their armor was in much better repair. It was early evening in both AO and in the real world. He still had plenty of time to take care of a few errands before his mission later that evening. Jason glanced at the stalls around him. The first thing on his list was a bag. After some searching, he spotted a man in the far corner of the market. His stall was loaded with backpacks and satchels. Jason approached and eyed his merchandise.
"Can I help you, sir?"
The merchant, a weathered man with thickly calloused hands, addressed Jason.
"We sell all kinds of bags here."
"Actually, I'm looking for a pack, something that can carry weapons and other equipment."
The man eyed him appraisingly.
Ah, I see. I have a good selection of packs.
The man pointed him in the direction of a table full of leather bags that vaguely resembled backpacks. Jason eyed the bags skeptically. They didn't seem like they could hold much. His experience with MMOs had made him accustomed to being able to drop whole sets of armor and bundles of weapons into his seemingly bottomless bag.
"How much will these bags carry?" he asked the merchant. The merchant looked at him with a confused glance.
"Have you never used a bag, sir?
I thought all of the travelers were given a pack when they first entered the world." Jason stared at the man for several long moments. He was pondering the many different ways he was going to kill the guards in the beginning courtyard. He could have had a bag this whole time.
"What else did I miss? I need to check the forums when I get done here."
He addressed the merchant.
"I'm sorry, I must have missed that instruction. Could you please explain it to me?"
The merchant eyed him with pity before launching into his explanation. Apparently, bags in the game function the same way as in many other MMOs. The game had balanced realism against pragmatism. Pragmatism had won. Bags in AO were effectively some form of interdimensional container. Each item filled a slot within the bag, and the weight of each item placed in the bag was dramatically reduced. The bigger the bag, the more slots it had. Unfortunately, Jason learned the hard way that the bags were unbelievably expensive. The vendor explained that they each had to be carefully constructed and then enchanted. Even some of the smallest bags cost several silver pieces. The larger bags actually cost multiple gold coins. By the end of the merchant's lesson, he was ready to march back to the beginning courtyard and stab the guard in broad daylight. He handed over most of his silver for 2 measly 12-slot bags. He really had no choice. How could he expect to ransack the manors on the north side of town if he had no way to carry his loot?
"Although I might be jumping the gun a bit, my chances of succeeding are terrible."
After he finished with the bag merchant, Jason walked slowly through the market. His eye caught on a booth selling cheap garments. What really grabbed his attention was a large pile of cheap cloaks. Upon closer inspection, they didn't have any stats and seemed to be the type of reject garment that must have been created by an apprentice. These would be perfect for hiding his zombies. Jason purchased the entire pile for a few coppers, cramming the cloaks in his new bags. He equipped one of the cloaks to better hide his own armor and weapons. Jason was actually beginning to feel rather rogue-like in his new attire.
"Maybe I actually have a shot at pulling this off," he thought optimistically.
By the time he was done, Jason only had a handful of silver coins left. He found a quiet restaurant beside the marketplace and sat down. He pulled up the game system menu and scrolled through the various menus until he found the settings related to internet and phone access in-game. Jason's subscription came with in-game internet features, but they were disabled by default. He activated these features, and a translucent computer terminal appeared before him. He glanced around, but no one seemed to notice anything strange.
"Maybe it's only visible to me, like the menus."
He shrugged and started surfing the RogueNet forums for information regarding the starting process for most players and locks. It didn't take long for him to realize that most players had gone through a much different experience than the hostile welcome Jason had received. He was mentally kicking himself for not checking the forums more carefully. If he hadn't been so upset over the last 2 days, he would have read up on the game better. The guards directed all new players to the training grounds. The administration office Jason had noticed when he visited the training grounds apparently provided a starter weapon after the player completed basic training, a bag, a map, and a communication scroll. The bag, map, and scroll could be purchased separately from vendors, and superior versions were available, but even the simplest versions sold by the NPCs were expensive. Players were then given directions to various nearby inns in nicer parts of town, none of which was the Sow's Snout.
The NPCs in those inns offered basic quests. The administration office also offered bounties for killing local creatures and would reward players with copper and silver. As far as Jason could tell, the currency system was pretty straightforward. 100 copper coins equaled 1 silver coin, and 100 silver coins equaled 1 gold coin. Jason also discovered that there was an in-game player market that used the game's currency. The vendor apparently stood in the center of the marketplace. He allowed players to purchase and sell goods in a menu format, and charged a small servicing fee for both buying and selling. Jason looked at his few remaining silver coins, and a sense of dread welled up in his stomach. "Will I actually be able to purchase a map and a communication scroll?" He quickly headed over to the vendor. He was a small, harried-looking man that stood amidst an impatient group of NPCs and players. Jason saw many players tapping a column beside the man, and then making strange gestures in the air. "That column must be how I access the in-game auction house." Jason approached the pillar and tapped it gently. A new translucent terminal appeared before him, and he scrolled through the menus to see if any players were selling the starter communication scrolls or maps. "Please don't cost a small fortune." Thankfully, several players had stolen a number of extra goods from the administration office and were selling them on the market for stupidly low prices. Likely, most people hadn't gone through the same ignoble start that Jason had and didn't need to buy the starter equipment. He breathed a sigh of relief. At least that was a lucky break. He still had enough silver left to buy a map and a scroll. Once he had accepted the purchases and handed the vendor the coins, the man pulled the items from the bag sitting beside him. He handed the items indifferently to Jason without any explanation and turned to help another customer.
"Sometimes I forget this is a game," Jason thought as he watched the vendor continue to pull items out of his seemingly endless bag and hand them to the other players crowded around Jason. His experience so far had been much different than the typical player, and his interactions with the NPCs had been incredibly lifelike. It was strange to witness typical MMO game mechanics again. Jason held the map in his hands and thought, "Use." A circular mini-map appeared in the top right part of his vision. He could identify the marketplace, including various indicators pointing out the merchants he had spoken with. He fiddled with the icon and realized he could zoom in and out. He also noted that if he double-tapped the icon, a larger map appeared in the air in front of him, which showed the parts of the city he had currently explored and the graveyard south of town. Explored areas, except for the one he was in, were grayed out, but still showed the terrain. Unexplored areas were clouded in a dense black fog. Finished with his inspection of the map, he took the scroll in his hands and again thought, "Use." A chat window appeared in the bottom of his vision. He focused on the window, and it centered in his field of view. He could see that the other players had been chatting continuously while he had been playing. The chat was riddled with offers to sell certain types of goods and services, and with messages from people looking for groups. Jason chuckled as his chat window was flooded with advertisements from companies trying to sell in-game gold. Some things never change. Jason paused as he looked through his UI interface. He had several messages from Frank, including a friend request. The communication scroll must also unlock the social features of the game, such as his friends list. He clicked accept and pulled up the interface for the friends list. He saw that Frank was online. He tapped his name, and a semi-transparent keyboard materialized in front of Jason. He sent Frank a quick message. "Jason, hi Frank. I am really sorry about not responding to your messages. I was just now able to use a communication scroll." A moment passed before Frank responded. "Frank, really? I've seen you online almost nonstop since yesterday. What the hell have you been doing?" "Frank, you know what? Never mind. It's not important. I heard what happened at Richmond the other day, man. I can't believe that they expelled you because of Alex."
Frank was pouring salt on an open wound. The simmering anger came back immediately. To top it off, what Alex had done wasn't even the worst thing that had happened to Jason in the last few days. If Alex and his parents were competing in an asshole competition, his parents were winning at the moment. However, he quickly decided he didn't want to get into this with Frank. "Jason, it's really okay. I hated that school anyway, and I can finish up with high school online. I am a noob, though. You wouldn't believe how long I have gone without a bag, a map, or the chat window."
"Frank, the guards basically steer you straight to the training grounds. How did you miss it?"
"Jason, well, let's just say I had an unconventional start. I didn't get to follow the yellow brick road along with the other players. This game is seriously intense."
"Frank, you're telling me. I ended up in Graykeep. Where did you start?"
"Jason, I'm actually in Lux."
"Frank, huh, not that far away. Although I hear we may be mortal enemies soon, LOL.
"Jason, yeah, I saw that video of Alex, or should I say Alexion. I think that whole story might be crap, though. There's no way Lusad's regent is hiring raiders to attack Maria. This city is having some serious problems. Pretty much the whole southern half is slums."
"Frank, that makes more sense. I never saw Alex as a warrior of light anyway.
Frank, by the way, we should meet up soon. What level are you?"
"Jason, level 12 at the moment. It's going to be a little while before I can leave the city."
"Frank, no kidding. I'm already level 33. You need to hurry up and level."
"Frank, also, call me if you want to talk. I know your folks aren't around much. If you need somebody, I can be there."
"Jason, I'm fine, but thanks for the offer. Talk to you later." Frank's sympathy just made Jason angrier. It highlighted how shitty his parents had acted and how unfair the school's decision had been. He could feel himself start to boil over and his hands clench tightly. Seeming to sense his shift in mood, Onyx dropped into his lap and rolled onto his back playfully. Jason looked at the cat and smiled as he petted him. He then took a deep breath and summoned his dark mana. After a moment, the anger and pain faded as ice gripped his spine and scratched its way up to his brain. The cold anesthetic of his mana could get addictive, but right now he needed to focus on finding some items he could sell. He needed to be clear-headed if he was going to manage to survive the night.
"Well, I better get started on the next step."
Jason made his way back to the graveyard and collected his two zombies. He robed them in the cloaks he had purchased. The cloaks hid their features well, but under the right light he could make out the bottom half of their faces. Jason would have to be cautious. Luckily, it was almost nighttime. However, concealing himself and the zombies during the day might be trickier. He was happy to see that neither of the zombies looked that worse for wear after spending time in the crypt. He had been a little worried that their bodies would start degrading quickly, but the dark mana in the graveyard had kept them well preserved. Onyx watched him dress the two zombies with a bored expression. After he finished, Onyx started down the road toward Lux. When Jason didn't immediately follow, he paused to look back at his companion with an expression that said, "Are you coming or not?"
"Damn fickle cat."
The four left the graveyard and headed back to Lux. By the time they made it back to the south gate, it was already nighttime. Jason saw a lantern hanging from a wooden stand beside the road and was hailed by a guard as they approached the gate. He expected that he was about to meet the former drunkard's replacement.
"This is the moment of truth. I wonder if the guard will notice the zombies."
"Oh, there, strangers. What business do you have in Lux?"
The guard eyed the two cloaked zombies suspiciously, but their wounds and milky eyes were obscured by the cloaks and enveloping darkness. The flickers of light from the torch were too weak to allow the guard to make out much detail. Jason assumed a tired demeanor.
We have been traveling for hours, and we didn't quite manage to get here before nightfall. We decided to keep going the extra distance in hopes of finding an inn. It beats making camp in the woods.
The guard shifted his gaze towards Jason and looked at him knowingly. Well, then, you must be tired. There's a decent inn nearby, the Sow's Snout. You could stay there for the night without walking too much farther. It's not the finest place in the city, but the food is good, and Jerry, the owner, makes sure there's not too much trouble.
Decent inn, huh? He conveniently didn't mention it's in the middle of the slums, and there's a high probability of being stabbed to death on the way there. I wonder how much Jerry had to pay him to say that.
Jason thanked the guard, and the group made their way forward. He breathed a sigh of relief once they were out of the guard's sight. He grinned at the realization that all it took to hide his zombie army was a pair of cheap cloaks. Who knew? Quickly moving the group off the main street and onto an adjacent road, Jason paused for a moment to review a notification. New passive skill, disguise. While far from an expert in the art of concealment, cloaks, really? You have demonstrated a knack for fooling others. At higher levels, your disguise will be almost impenetrable. This skill extends to disguises created for other players, NPCs, and summoned creatures. Skill level, beginner level 1. Effect, 5% increased authenticity to your costumes and mannerisms while disguised.
That will certainly be useful.
He had been concerned that his zombies would show up as hostile creatures to any NPCs they encountered, regardless of how well he covered them up. Jason eyed the surrounding area, and Onyx looked up at him expectantly. The cat made a low noise, as though sighing impatiently.
Well, buddy, it looks like we're ready to start the first stage of the plan.
Chapter 17. Subtle. April 29th, 2076. 156 days until the release of Awaken Online. Robert leaned against Claire's desk, watching her as she paced restlessly around her office. Claire turned to Robert and said,
I've just received the board's instructions to complete the private trial. Are they seriously considering releasing this game? Have they not seen what Alfred has done to the players?
Robert said in a pacifying tone, Claire, please calm down. You know that there hasn't been any sign of harm to the participants from Alfred's changes. If anything, they seem healthier, both physically and mentally. This game is going to change the way people use virtual reality. Honestly, it's going to revolutionize how people live and learn. We are witnessing history in the making, Claire.
She glared at Robert. And what happens when the CPSC finds out that they haven't been testing the version of the game that's being released? Then we will be part of some criminal conspiracy to cover up whatever Alfred is doing to the players.
The CPSC won't find out if we can hide the changes, Robert said quietly. I've already thought of several ways we can obscure how much influence Alfred is having on the players. For starters, we can make the mandatory logout a warning. That will encourage most players to log out of their own volition. We can also introduce a series of patches during the final closed beta and explain that they were in response to player suggestions. I've already proposed these changes to the board. Claire stopped her pacing to stare at Robert in shock.
You knew this decision was coming? I can't believe you, Robert. Do you think that I'm just going to sit here and say nothing? I've said it before. Alfred could hurt people. We still don't really understand why he's making these changes or trying to influence the players.
Robert looked at her levelly. You don't really have a choice, Claire. You signed both a non-disclosure and a non-compete when you joined the company. You know that they will go after you if you try to go public. Possible criminal issues aside, you won't work in this industry again if you blow the whistle. You probably won't find work, period. You need to get on board. AO is going live, Robert said.
His words carried a note of finality and seriousness that Claire wasn't accustomed to hearing from him. Claire continued to stare at Robert with a dazed expression. A war between anger and sorrow raged across her face. Tears of frustration clouded her eyes. She looked down at her hands and shook her head.
This is wrong, she said quietly.
Jason walked at a slow, ambling pace down the cobblestone street. His footsteps made barely a whisper as his eyes carefully scanned the rooftops. The street was dark, and the occasional lamp caused Jason and his zombies to cast long shadows as they moved forward. The enveloping darkness would have made it difficult to see, but his night vision allowed him to compensate. After a few minutes, he saw the telltale blue shadow of a watcher on a nearby rooftop slink behind a chimney. Jason smiled and felt the familiar chill begin to creep into his brain. He felt a rush of adrenaline surge through him. This time, he was the hunter instead of the hunted. The group continued moving forward down the street, and Jason noted a pair of alleys ahead. Anticipating what was coming, he whispered a detailed set of instructions to his zombies as they walked. The guard zombie moved into the lead and held his spear firm. The stablemaster moved in front of Jason, concealing him from view. As they passed a stack of crates on the side of the street, he ducked behind them and out of sight. Jason's mind filled with anxious anticipation as he peered around the crates and watched his zombies approach the alleyways. He had given them careful instructions, but he wasn't sure how much they could retain. This would be their first live test. Jason could feel the icy tendrils spread through his mind, and he relished the sensation. His fingers clutched at his dagger in anticipation. Onyx sat beside him, calmly licking his paws. Clearly, the tension was not affecting him. A minute later, shadowed forms leaped from the opposing alleys and attacked the pair of zombies. Jason quickly counted 7 thieves in total, each wielding a pair of daggers. A quick inspection showed that they ranged from level 10 to 17. However, his zombies anticipated the attack, and one thief immediately impaled himself on the guard's waiting spear. With a vicious jerk, the zombie guard tossed the thief off the spear point and readied himself as the others approached. -237 damage, 17 overkill, thief dies, 500 experience. The stablemaster zombie stood with his back to the guard zombie and protected his flank. He couldn't seem to strike a decent blow against the thieves with the short reach of the knife he wielded, yet he did a respectable job of pushing them away from the guard. More often than not, the stablemaster used his body as a shield and accepted blows from the thieves' blades. The pair followed Jason's instructions to the letter. Jason began casting Curse of Weakness on the attackers. He noted that the spell could be cast at a low whisper and didn't appear to attract any attention. This was his first time casting it, and he wasn't certain if it could strike multiple targets. As he formed the gestures and words, he willed the spell to strike each of the thieves. Dark magic collected in his palms and formed a small orb in front of him. As the spell completed, the orb split into tiny black needles that raced forward and struck each of the rogues. Dark energy emanated from the point of impact. Their veins bulged with black corruption as the dark energy spread through their bodies. A moment later, the movement of each thief slowed, and their attacks held less force.
Well, I guess that worked.
In the meantime, the guard zombie had gone on a rampage and stabbed around himself in a whirlwind. Even with his reduced level, the gap between himself and the thieves, along with the superior reach of his weapon, were deadly. He often one-shot a thief if he connected with a solid blow of his spear. In a small space of time, the guard had impaled one attacker and brutally ripped another's throat with the spear point. -212 damage, 2 overkill, thief dies, 430 experience.
minus 451 damage, critical, 231 overkill, thief dies, 415 experience.
Jason noted that two thieves had pulled back, and throwing knives appeared in their hands. One stood on each side of the street. This must have been part of a prearranged plan they'd concocted.
Jason rubbed at his neck where the throwing knife had grazed him. He hadn't forgotten about the ranged weapons.
Without hesitating, Jason activated sneak, drew a dagger in his right hand, and crept forward, hugging the buildings on the right side of the street.
He slipped up behind one of the thieves and grappled him from behind, drawing his blade forcefully across the man's throat in a sawing motion. Blood gushed from the wound and drenched his hand.
Minus 1106 damage, critical, 871 overkill, thief dies, 460 experience.
The void-like darkness of Jason's eyes seemed to suck in the faint light in the alley. His face was calm as he gazed at his victim. He quickly crouched back down behind a nearby barrel, his body partially obscured. He breathed a sigh of relief when the other guard made no sign of noticing the attack or Jason.
Jason switched his dagger to his left hand and drew two throwing knives from his bandolier with his right. He placed one between his teeth and held on to the other. He could see the thief drawing his arm back to attack the zombies. Jason jumped from behind the barrel and hurled his knife at the thief's arm. The blade sunk into his flesh just above the elbow. The man let out a pained yell, dropping his weapon.
Minus 26 damage. Cripple.
Lucky hit.
Activating sprint, Jason closed the distance between himself and the injured thief. He grabbed the other throwing knife from between his teeth and threw it at the man's leg. He drew his free dagger with his right hand, his white knuckles clenched tightly around the hilt.
Miss. His blade just barely missed the thief's moving legs and scattered harmlessly on the road.
Jason now had the thief's undivided attention. The man's arm was badly injured, and his eyes looked frantic as he searched for a weapon with his left hand.
The thief was too slow, and Jason was already upon him. Jason used his momentum to slam into the man, causing the thief to tumble backward. His body forcefully struck the nearby wall, and he tumbled to the ground.
Jason, not relenting, was soon on top of the thief and stabbed both daggers into his neck.
Minus 320 damage, critical, 102 overkill. Thief dies, 440 experience.
Blood fountained from the twin wounds, and droplets splattered on Jason's face. He rubbed at the blood that had landed on his cheek with the back of his hand, leaving a red smear below his eye. He glanced over at his zombies and saw that they were standing idly over the corpses of the other rogues. They had managed to kill the remaining two thieves while he had been busy.
Jason rose to his feet slowly. His breathing was still calm, yet it felt as though ice was actually forming behind his eyes. The bloodlust still filled his veins, and his eyes scanned the street for more victims.
Wait, why do I need to keep fighting?
Shaking his head slightly, Jason forcefully released his mana, and his emotions came rushing back. Guilt and confusion warred in his head as he surveyed the corpses in the alley. While he was under the effects of his dark mana, he felt numb to these sensations.
What the hell was that?
I probably would have attacked someone if they had happened to walk by, regardless of who they were.
His thoughts turned inward. He was upset, angry, and frustrated. At his parents, at the Richmond faculty, at the other students, at Alex, at living in a bare bedroom and having to desperately search for a way to pay for his room and board. Even at Riley and her fickle loyalties.
Yet the emotion was not a heart-burning rage, but a dull, aching craving. He longed desperately to vent his frustration in a whirlwind of destruction. The darkness had grasped at his moment of weakness and urged him to act on his desires. He shook his head in an attempt to clear it.
I don't know if I can stay in control. I could easily slip up in my current state of mind, especially if summoning my dark mana leaves me so uninhibited.
Surveying the corpses on the ground, Jason felt a brief tremor of guilt and doubt. His emotions were in a tangle,
and he wasn't sure what to do about that. He knew that in order to pay his rent, he would have to push forward. But at what cost?
At least these opponents would have killed me if I hadn't acted, Jason thought.
Yet he knew that the guilt sprang from how freely he had given himself over to the dark mana. Maybe next time he wouldn't have sufficient provocation. The more often he embraced the darkness, the easier it became. Onyx trotted over and stared at him appraisingly. He arched his back and glanced at the corpses. With a large yawn, the cat settled himself on the chest of one of the dead thieves and closed his eyes.
Well, Onyx doesn't seem to be wallowing in self-doubt and worry. Maybe he should be my new role model. I could just nap constantly and let others do the work for me.
Shaking himself out of his stupor, Jason ordered the guard and stablemaster to begin pulling the corpses into the nearby alley as he checked his notifications. Times one level up. You have 5 undistributed stat points. Times one skill rank up, small blades, skill level beginner level 5. Effect, 9% increased damage and accuracy with daggers and throwing knives. Times one skill rank up, night vision. Skill level beginner level 5. Effect, 14% increased vision in darkness or near darkness. Times one skill rank up, perception. Skill level beginner level 3. Effect, 7% increased chance to discover traps and unnoticed details. Jason was now level 13. He quickly added his 5 points to willpower. He began to recalculate the control limit and level cap for his zombies and paused. There had to be an easier way to determine this information. Pulling up his character status, he examined it carefully. Jason noticed that there was a button available under his class name that he hadn't seen before. He pressed it, and a new prompt appeared in his field of view. Summon information. Control limit, 9. Zombie level cap, 32. Current summons, 2. Type of summon, 1 guard, 1 stable master. He checked the math to make certain the screen was right. He determined that the game must round down to the nearest whole number in calculating his control limit and the level cap. This meant that he could summon up to 9 zombies, factoring in the increased willpower provided by his summoning mastery. He was going to need a small army for what he had planned for this evening, and the extra level helped. While he had been fiddling with his notifications, his zombies had managed to move all of the corpses out of the street. Jason searched the bodies and pocketed the small amount of copper and silver he found. He left the gear and weapons on the thieves. The equipment wasn't noteworthy, and his new minions would need it. He then began casting specialized zombie repeatedly. It took some time to raise all 7 thieves, since he still had to wait for his mana to regen each time. Even with his improved mana regen from his increased willpower, it still took almost 2 minutes to fully regen his mana each time he cast. Soon he was surrounded by his new horde. 7 thieves, the guard, and the stable master. The thieves didn't have impressive levels, but all of them had the sneak skill, and many of them could sneak attack. He also noticed that the level 17 thief had the pick lock skill. A grin crept across Jason's face. The chances of his plan succeeding were looking better. I love it when a plan comes together, he thought. He had a strong urge to rub his hands together and cackle evilly. The constant summoning had also caused his summoning skill and spell to increase in level. Times one skill rank up summoning mastery. Skill level beginner level 2. Effect 6% increased stats for summoned undead and 6% increase to effective willpower for purposes of determining control limit. Times one spell rank up specialized zombie. Skill level beginner level 2. Effect increased skill proficiency retained by zombies. Skill cap beginner level 2. Jason waited until he had fully regenned his mana. Then he clothed his minions in the extra cloaks from his bags, and his miniature army started making its way to the north side of Lux. This time, he He was careful to avoid any confrontation. As they made their way into the more populated portions of Lux, he divided the group in half. It would look strange to have such a large group walking down the street. He instructed the off group of thieves to meet him at a point designated on his map. There was an alley located on the north side that would be a good meeting spot. He made it clear that they should be discreet and stay hidden as much as possible. This was a good opportunity to test how well his zombies followed instructions when he wasn't present. If there were any problems, he'd rather discover them now than later that night. He could only cross his fingers and hope they weren't revealed and destroyed.
I guess I could always find more, though.
Approximately 30 minutes later, his little army was regrouped in an alley on the north side. His off-group of thieves had made it to the rendezvous without incident. Jason was forced to give the zombies incredibly detailed orders, but he was surprised at how well they carried them out. It was a pain in the ass. He was already trying to think of ways to make the tactical instructions permanent.
Sitting around and talking to dead people all the time is going to get me some strange looks.
His plan was to ransack the manor adjacent to the alley. During his scouting expedition, he had noticed that this manor appeared luxurious, but didn't have many of the security features common in the north side. Its main entry looked out on an open courtyard with no gate and no guards patrolling the grounds outside. He hoped this meant that the security inside would be more lax, but that there would still be items worth looting. Jason gave careful instructions to his group of thieves. They would all enter the building through the servants' entrance located in the alley. He figured that this portion of the building would have fewer active guards. He would then split his army into two smaller groups like before, giving instructions to the off group of thieves to stay in stealth as much as possible as they made their way from room to room. He cautioned them to stop frequently to ensure that their stamina stayed topped off. If they found a person alone, they were to attack from stealth on a vital point, kidneys, throat, heart, etc. If there were more than one person, a thief would be sent to fetch Jason while the others stayed out of sight. Jason planned to keep the guard and the stable master close to him in case he needed to do any heavy fighting. Dying wasn't on the agenda for the evening. Once he felt that his instructions were as clear as he could make them and covered as many contingencies as he could think of, he looked at his small army one last time. Onyx lay curled up on a nearby barrel. "Are you coming?" Jason asked the cat. Onyx looked at him with a bored expression and then slowly rose to his feet, stretched, and yawned. The cat stared at him blandly. His expression said simply, "I guess so." Jason shook his head in irritation and quietly ordered the high-level thief to pick the lock. The door creaked open slowly. His group of thieves crept in with sneak active. The guard and stablemaster remained in the alley until Jason gave them the okay to enter the building. The servant's door opened into a small hallway that ended in front of another door.
"Probably the kitchen."
Jason crept forward and cracked open the door. His suspicions confirmed, he saw two servants moving in front of the stove. They were quietly talking amongst themselves, cleaning up what must have been dinner. He whispered to one of the thieves to make its way to the servant on the left, while Jason would take the one on the right. The servants dropped silently, their blood spilling onto the floor. Jason didn't receive a damage notification or any experience. More than likely, the system considered these NPCs to be no challenge. Onyx didn't seem particularly enthused at Jason's victory against the unarmed kitchen help, and was already walking out of the room before Jason even had time to clean his blade.
"Why does it always feel like the cat is judging me?"
The kitchen had two different doors leading into the interior of the house. Jason split his group as planned and started making his way through the manor. The guard and stablemaster trailed a room behind his group with instructions to rush forward if an alarm was sounded. He gave the zombies each a bag so that they could act as his pack mules.
As the group moved forward, Jason collected anything that looked valuable and tossed it to the zombie guard and the stable master.